Mayor Bellwether, when they go to her little office, which is sad because it's like an office storage room. If you look at her phone when they're trying to look at the security systems and Nick's playing with her hair, you'll see that there's a sticky note on the phone or around it, and it says, call Jesse.
And oh, right, yeah.
It was a reference to Breaking Bad.
Right.
And then you find out that the guy in the lab, the whole lab scene was set up to make, to reference Breaking Bad. Right. And the chief's right. name was Walter. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, no, see, that's, I don't know, maybe it's my imagination, but I think they were saying Walter, as in a pun. Yeah. Walter. Walter.
Yeah, but yeah, there was a reference to Walter for Breaking Bad. It was crazy.
Yeah. Yeah. Again, we're going to start in a few minutes, but High Wing is defending his bid at the art show. So give him a little time. It's actually 24 past, so it's still kind of early. It's supposed to be at 11:30.
But yeah, I've never called that Walter.
I think that's what they were saying, was Walter, and I thought it was a little reference, that sort of thing and everything. One thing I was going to mention earlier was the name Nick, in British slang or whatever. You could either nick something, you steal something. I nicked it, okay? Or if you're caught by the police, you have been nicked. If you watch Monty Python or something, there's a scene. Well, you have been nicked. So I don't know. I think the Nick character was based on people like Cary Grant, the kind of smooth talking whatever, con man or something. And isn't Jason Bateman in a car commercial now, by the way? I think there's, like, you see him at the end, Jason Bateman, the voice of Nick Wilde. And so you think about him and things like that.
Speaking of Nick and foxes, when Finnick first spoke, I was shocked.
Oh, yeah.
I did not expect a little Finnick fox to have such a deep voice. And he's French.
Yeah.
Yeah, when the rap that he listens to in his van was French rap.
Oh, it was? Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Well, that's like a... it's a stereo. He's a little teeny guy, and he's playing a baby or playing a little kid or something. There was an old Warner Brothers cartoon that was kind of based on that idea. And a few years ago, there was a movie called Little Man about, it was like the Wayans brothers were involved with it, and there was a dwarf, and he was pretending to be a kid, and he was being taken in and to steal a jewel back or something like that. So it's the same plot. So they kind of stole that plot in a way, the same sort of thing, you know. So, yeah. Like I say, we're going to wait for, his real name is Bruce, but High Wing. So I guess, yes, the whole thing, we got to wait for him to defend his bid and that sort of thing.
I love the guy that got the voice in, too, Devo.
What Devo?
The guy that voiced the Fennec was Zeus Lister. He played Devo in Friday.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And he passed on.
Monster.
Tiny Lister, and he passed on about a year or two ago.
Yeah, no.
So any sequel or what, the TV series or something, that may have to recast the voice or something like that, you know. Yeah, I know I'm giving away all these little bits of trivia that I was going to save for later, but seeing some of the voices appear in other movies and everything, one of them was Don Lake was Stu Hopps. And there was a movie called Downsizing about people who volunteer to be shrunk to 5 inches tall. So Matt Damon has come to Leisureland. Everything is scaled down. And he's in a little teeny-weeny little toy car. And the tour guide is played by Don Lake. So you have that. You have, J.K. Simmons, the mayor there, in a bunch of TV commercials for farmers and some TV shows and things like that. And you had Octavia Spencer, I think was her last name, who played Mrs. Otterton. She played a prostitute in Bad Santa 2. What was the kid? Sherman Merman or whatever it was that is taken under the wing of Billy Boy Thornton's character there. Wants to introduce him to a prostitute, and it's played by Octavia Spencer. You know, you think about that. And so there's other ones as well and everything, you know. What did I hear? Something like the same character did, I just forgot the name, but he did Gideon, and also I think he did like a pig or something, or there was like another character, Uncool Rabbit or whatever, Phil Johnston maybe, did two different voices. And the directors, who were they? They were the Antlersons. What was it? Now I'm forgetting their names. But you know what I'm talking about. Byron Howard.
His name.
Well, But one of the producers of the movie left Disney, I mean, left Disney Pixar or whatever, and went to a different studio. It'll come to me, but you know what I'm talking about. Yeah. So.
Zootopia really spoke to me, and I cried during the, because I went to the night early viewing too. And,
right, yeah, the early, yeah.
Yeah, but I cried because I'm a gay man and a person of color, and we come from a small town in a red state, and I get told, like, go back to Africa, and I get called a bunch of slangs and stuff like that.
Right.
The movie really spoke to me, especially Benjamin Clawhauser, because he's got, I'm not trying to stereotype him, but he's got, like, the sense that, oh, he may be gay, like, I can relate to him because of his mannerisms and how he acts and how sweet he is. And it really hit me when they were protesting for the predators to stay away from the prey,
right.
And they were trying to segregate. It really, I cried during that because it really related to me with being a person of color in a small red state town.
Yep.
And what the line that really got to me was the guy that told the cheetah to go back to the desert or something like that. She's like, I'm from the savannah.
I'm from the savannah, yeah.
Yeah, that really got to me because people tell me to go back to Africa from where I'm from. And I'm like, I'm from Virginia.
Yeah. The people of Pittsburgh, for the most part, accept us and everything like that, but some will make fun and all that sort of stuff. I put this on Twitter. I went to DeLuca's Diner in the Strip District, and there was a guy who, I don't know if I want to call him a redneck, whatever, kind of looked over at me, didn't say this to me, but said, oh, look at that mother bleeper with the tail and everything.
Yeah.
But he said the word, whatever. And I just said nothing. I didn't know what to say. I just said that. And so, whatever. And then he was like a regular, I could tell. And then he walks out or whatever. And as I left, they said to me nicely, well, hey, enjoy your convention and everything. Now, of course, they don't want to have a reputation for being bad for business, like Burger King or whatever like that. But you could also tell it was generic. You're going to bump into people like that. It happens. But there are people out there that are more accepting. And, yeah, it depends where you are. You have to admit, you know. And
yeah, Zootopia, it really made me feel like I belong in this world because I had really bad depression and had thoughts of suicide and stuff like
right,
that because
yeah.
of where I'm from and all the hate that I got for being who I am. But watching Zootopia, I found out that there is a community out there that loves me and I can be a part of. And it felt like, Zootopia felt like my life, basically.
Exactly, yeah.
I just loved how they showed diversity and everyone coming together, celebrating their differences. Gazelle really spoke to me when she said that this isn't the Zootopia that.
Right, yeah.
Yeah. And I feel like that message is more important now than ever with everything going on with politics and stuff.
Right, yeah, that's the whole thing about that. And of course, when the basic idea of making the movie came about, there were people out there. Hello?
Hello.
Hello, all right, we can start. You had to defend your bid or something, is what I heard.
I would have been here on time, but I got caught behind some fursuiters.
Okay.
Who's
yellow?
You know
am I wearing it? Okay. I got those. Where did I put the other one? Okay. Oh, I'm wearing it. Okay. We both
stuff.
Have the same. Hello. We both have the same Gideon ones. Right? This was in 2019 or 18 or whatever. They had these downstairs in the dealer's room. So you've got the young and the old one, right? Or the older one.
I have both Gideons.
You've got
it's the yin and the yang.
You gotta love Gideon.
And Nick and a whole bunch of other things and everything too. Okay. Introduce yourself. I already got us rolling a little bit, bud.
Hello, I am High Wing. I've been doing this since 2016, the year the
That's
movie
right.
came out. And apparently there's still interest in it, so I'm gonna keep on doing it.
Oh yeah.
And how could there not be?
Yeah.
This is the movie the furry fandom has been waiting for, or had been waiting for years, and we finally got it.
And it really speaks to people of color and different cultures, too.
I think it speaks to everyone. It's so universal.
Well,
much like the con itself. I mean, one thought that's often occurred to me when I see all the fursuiters walking around is, underneath that suit, you don't have any idea who's there. When they put on the suit, they just disappear, and they become their character. And I think that's a great thing. So,
My name is Anthro Coon. It's actually Bob Nelson, but I am 60 years old, and I have been to every single AnthroCon since we started in 1997, and so much that I originally called it Raccoony or something, but I thought, how about Anthro Coon? That would be a nice little pun on that, so I decided to do that. And yes, we have done this panel 16, 17, 18, and 19. You actually had a co-host, but he couldn't make it this year.
Yes,
you invited me.
My regular co-host, Scarlath, who did it 16, 17, 18, 19. Unfortunately, not 21 or 22, because there was no physical anthropocon.
20 and 21. We were in 22, yeah.
Right.
20 and 21, yeah.
20 and 21.
Yeah.
Like I said, I got stuck behind some procedures.
Right.
Yeah, he couldn't make it, sadly. But you, I understand, have done Zootopia panels of your own at other conventions.
I've done it, well, for Apocalypse and Anthro New England. I co-hosted it with Dapper over at Anthro New England, and I've done it for Apocalypse as well. I just did a classic cartoons panel in there, and I've done that at several cons. But the Zootopia one, it's just a great thing to do, like you say. And again, there is still interest. Now, there have been some other similar things that have had some interest. For example, at Furrydelphia, there was a Beastars panel.
Yes.
Were you there? I was there.
Well, I wasn't there, but I love Beastars.
I've only watched it all the way through once, and I don't even have Netflix anymore. But yeah, there is still interest. And we were all waiting for this year when we were going to get the series, and now we hear November 9th. Ah, we got to wait till November! Yeah. For 6 episodes, which all are coming out on the same day. They're not going to be staggered.
No, wait, are you talking about Beastars or the Zootopia Plus?
Zootopia. Oh, Zootopia Plus, as we heard, November 9th at, well, whatever time, Disney Plus, and it's going to be 6 episodes, and they call it short form. That could be 7-minute cartoons or half an hour or whatever. It's not going to be 2 hours,
no.
But they were going to release them all the same day.
Well,
and we'll
really
find out later.
Do
yeah.
You really need 2 hours of Duke Weaselton or Bonnie and Stu Hops? Well, actually, Bonnie and Stu might be.
Yeah. But the idea is they want to focus on different characters and maybe even some new ones. Backstories. Now, we were talking earlier. Someone was saying you'd love to see the backstory of Gideon, more about Gideon or something, you know? Maybe we'll get it this time. What I've heard so far is something about the Tigers, Gazelle's Tigers, something that almost could be everything from Godfather 2 to An American Tale, the backstory of Mr. Big. And then I think something about Flash Slothmore. There might be something.
Yes.
Whether there will be Nick and Judy, I don't know.
Well,
maybe they'll be in 2 minutes, you know, just a quick little cameo.
Well,
who knows?
They released a total of 6 images, which I assume reflect the 6 ones. So in addition to the ones you just mentioned, there was one for Stu and Bonnie, which I alluded to. One for Fru Fru. So I guess she's going to have her own separate one apart from Mr. Big. And what was the 6th one? There were a total of 6.
Can't remember, Ma. I don't have the thing in front of me. Yeah. And you know, Judy's parents, you got Bonnie. Is it Bonnie Hunt doing the voice? Okay.
I think so.
Okay.
Think so.
So that's a little pun on Bunny. And on her, and how about Stew? Rabbit Stew, get it? Rabbit Stew. Okay, that was kind of funny. I mentioned before you came here, there was a movie called Downsizing about people shrinking voluntarily to 5 inches tall with Matt Damon, and they wind up in this thing called Leisureland, which is scaled down. So when he first gets there, his guide in this little putt-putt car or whatever is played by Don Lake. So that was kind of funny. Oh, I recognize that voice.
Nice.
That was Don Lake. So if you happen, I have the DVD and stuff. So yeah, but that's there's just so many little facets of the movie that we can explore.
And we do it.
And the series and everything. Yeah.
And it never grows tired. So, okay. Well, we've talked about Zootopia Plus, which is coming out. How many of you were a little disappointed that it was going to be that form as a follow-up instead of a full-fledged theatrical sequel?
Well, it should be. I'd like to see both in some ways.
Well, I'm all for both. Well, in the panels I've done in the past, by the way, how many of you have attended any of our previous panels?
Oh,
wow, we have a virgin audience.
Ooh, well, I was there, okay. But I'm
you're,
co-panelist.
You're on this
I'm co-panelist,
right
yeah.
Yes. No, one thing that was popular that we talked about quite a bit, and I just entirely lost my train of thought of what I was going to say. What were you talking about?
About, have you been to our panels before?
No, I meant before then. Oh, well.
I believe that you were asking us if we were disappointed that it was coming out as a Zootopia Plus instead
Right. And thank you, because that gets me back on track. We had a lot of discussions in the previous years about what would any Zootopia follow-up entail, what would it cover. And I got a lot of feedback from the audiences then that they didn't necessarily want to see a Judy and Nick follow-up. I mean, that seemed to be the majority of sentiment, but there was a large minority that was saying, well, we've seen their story arc already, and yes, there's other things you could do with it, But let's look at the city. This is the thing that the creators and animators of the film itself fell in love with. Said, we put so much work into the city, and we want to see more of the city and the inhabitants, the residents who inhabit it. And in a way, Zootopia Plus is going in that direction. This will be not only a chance to flesh out the backstories of the supporting characters, but through them, to get more of the history of Zootopia, see more of the city, more of the districts we didn't get before in the movie.
There's one thing about Zootopia that I'm really curious about, and I want to know the answer to. Where are the birds?
I've said this before. They are mentioned in the song. Birds exist somewhere. Birds fly, but they don't. They don't just fly. They fall down and they get up. Birds are there somewhere. Well, you know what they said. They said maybe like lizards or whatever may be existing on another continent.
Yeah, we're the reptiles too. Now that you mention it, too.
Yeah.
They live in Greater Reptilia. We won't go there.
I assume they stick to one of the more arid biomes.
Yeah.
They probably don't really go to the other parts of the city because.
Well, you know, Zootopia is promoted both in the movie promotion and within the context of the film itself as a mammal metropolis. I think the whole thing is designed to be for mammals. Whether that implies that only mammals are sentient or sapient, or there might be intelligent birds, intelligent reptiles somewhere, that's left up to the fans, really, because it hasn't been answered definitively one way or the other.
Yeah, and one more thing about Zootopia as well. I'm wondering about their diets, since it's predator and prey. I wonder if they're doing like the whole Beastars thing where they eat tofu and soy stuff. Or
well, that actually has been addressed not in the movie itself, but by the producers and writers. They said that the insects are used a lot for the processed insects.
Okay, that makes sense.
In fact, bug burger, I think, is something that was thrown around. I don't think it's mentioned in any of the official canon material.
Yeah.
But
well, there can be certain things like so-called meatless meats or something, mm-hmm. or soy or milk. You know, there might be ways to get it like that. You never know. But there's also fish. Mm-hmm. There was that brief scene of Tundra Town, and it says Clark's halibuts.
Yep. Yes.
Oh, they definitely eat fish there, and that's probably where a lot of the predators get a lot of their protein from.
Right.
And then you have the bug burger. So between those two and the synthetic stuff that you just mentioned, there should be no shortage of them ways for them to get their protein. So I don't think that's a problem. We've just never seen it officially addressed or answered.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you know, there's things about the way their bodies are in fish. For example, how do they wear glasses? What my guess is there must be like a string in the back. They put because they don't have the ears on the side, so they probably have a string and they put it that way. And how do they drink? They don't drink like us. How does like a cat or a dog drink? They do it with the tongue, right? They lap it up. I would imagine that's how they do it. They don't. Maybe they go like this a little bit, but you would think they would lap it up like a cat or a dog or a raccoon.
Maybe straws are just very popular in their universe.
Or something like that, yeah.
Yeah.
But back to your thing about the glasses, there are characters in the film who wear glasses, of course.
Somehow they could stay on there.
Bogo. Bogo pull out and put on a pair of...
He puts them down.
Bellwether has this huge pair of glasses.
Yep.
So,
now that you mention it, when you look at their glasses, I don't know if Bellwether had the arms. I think it was just the lenses, and she was just,
And Bogo's are the same way. It's a pair of spectacles with no attachments. He just sticks it on her snout.
Yeah.
So, I mean, all these little details are there that the animators put in, and if you just pay attention, I mean, they're all there. Do they work? Are they properly explained? No, that's subjective, but it's all there. I mean, one of the things I love about the movie, and that has me keep coming back to it over and over again, is the amount of detail and thought that was put into it. Now, how many of you here know the backstory behind the evolution of Zootopia as a film?
A little bit.
I saw I saw a couple of YouTube videos about the cut initial drafts of the story.
Right. Yeah, now, you're talking about the tame collar?
Yeah.
Well, go back even before that. Disney decided they were going to do another talking animal film, but that was it. They just didn't know what it was going to be. And one of the first concepts they threw around was some sort of spy story. How many of you here have heard the name Jack Savage? Only One, two, okay, oh, okay, there are a few of you. Jack Savage was originally going to be a bunny, done in the model of either James Bond or some sort of world adventurer who goes around and goes on all kinds of exciting adventures. And there was a very early draft for the film that featured him as the main character, but only the first third of the film was going to be set in Zootopia. I don't know if it had a name yet, but then it was going to move out and go like an undersea adventure or something like that. And some of the higher-ups looked at it and said, we really love what you're doing with the city. We don't think it works as well once it moves out of the city. And so that was the first step towards saying, okay, we're going to do another animal film, but it's going to be in the city. And from that point on, I think it started to grow so the city became a character in the film. And they spent more and more work at that point putting effort into building the city and making it seem like a real place designed by animals. The next iteration after the Jack Savage concept was shelved was that's when the character of Nick Wilde was first created. But it was going to be a spy spoof parody. It was going to be like a 1960s James Bond type, almost sort of like an anthro-animated version of Austin Powers. And that was the concept they played around with for a while, with Nick as the main character.
And with Finnick and Clawhauser as sidekicks, as I understand it. Clawhauser was a sidekick.
So they played around with that for a while, and at some point, I think that might have made a very decent film, and a very funny film.
I can actually see that in my head, the Austin Powers thing. Like, it's all playing out right there.
Oh, behave.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yes. Mm-hmm.
I don't know if Jason Bateman would have voiced Nick, but it would have been interesting either way. But for some reason, the folks at Disney said, no, spy stuff is getting old. There's been too much spy stuff. We don't want to get away from spy stuff. And somehow they got from that to the first version that's similar to what we finally saw on the screen. Zootopia with Nick as like a regular citizen and Judy as the cop. I think that was the first time Judy was even introduced at that point. But it was still going to have Nick as the main character and Judy as his foil. And it was going to have something with Nick getting set up to take the fall and framed for some sort of crime, and Judy as the one who's sort of like Les Miserables, where she's the relentless pursuer of him, and he's trying to win him over to convince her of his innocence and get her on his side. But that was where the tame collars first came in, because this version of Zootopia was going to have one little detail that didn't make the final film, and that was that all predators were required by law to wear a shock collar. And it was automatically regimented or set so that if their emotions got too out of control, it would shock them. And shock them.
And they had a scene, a sequence with a polar bear and the young kid, and it was almost like a rite of passage, thing like a bar mitzvah or something, where you are an adult, you get the tame collar. That sort of thing.
And what he's talking about was actually animated.
It was.
They actually got to the point with this idea. The film was in production with the tame collar, with Nick as the main protagonist being framed. They had started to animate that and had produced rough animation for it. So they were well along.
I think as well. I saw it on YouTube, or if not voice lines, that it might have been dialogue written on screen. But like Judy's there with Nick at that point, and she sees this rite of passage, and Nick's explaining it to her.
Yes, yes. So that was actually in production. They were only, I believe, 21 months away from the actual release date when they decided the tame collars were not working. They took a long, hard look. They had the higher-ups in Disney come in and look at all the footage that had been roughly animated up to that point, and the storyboards for the rest of the film, and they said, something about this isn't working. And they realized what it was. They said, we put so much work into creating this city, and now this city is not a place that any viewer would like. It's not a place any viewer would root for. They wouldn't care if it goes down in flames, because they're seeing such injustice being carried out on a daily basis with these tame collars. And they realized then they had something that might risk losing the audience. I mean, yeah, if they had gone through with it, it might have been a very interesting film, and I still hear fans to this day saying, I wish I had stuck with that original idea, which, as I just explained, is actually not the original idea. It came along in the process. But Yeah, and they decided at that point, we're going to redo the whole thing, get rid of the tame collars, flip it so that Judy is now the main character, and Nick shows up and becomes her sidekick. And I think they made the right choice. I mean, they needed to show the city to the viewer through the eyes of someone in the movie itself. And by making Judy the protagonist, they were able to do that in a way that they couldn't have done it if they had stuck with the shock collar iteration.
And Judy was from out of town, about 200 miles away or so in Bunnyboro, and she thought it was going to be a great place and everything, and she wanted to be a police officer, and then they brought her there, and she found out how screwed up things were, and she got involved with the whole plot and everything, and you had the whole criminal and cop working together, it takes a thief, that sort of thing, or something like that, the unlikeliness, and they changed through the movie. At first, they don't really like each other, but somehow something clicks, and then you had the famous scene in the gondola, and you realized that they had something in common, and they decided, well, they became friends and everything like that, and they wanted to work together, but before in the movie, it's like, oh, get me away from this guy, you know? So characters change in the movie. Gideon, you know, when he started out, he was a jerk. He was a bully, but at the end, he learned his ways. So characters can change as they grow older. Someone will come into their lives. They will be a factor, and then change.
Well,
change yourself.
I was thinking myself just earlier today about Gideon. I'm like, well, you know, his redemption arc is great, and it's a wonderful. If you think about it, the whole movie is about redemption arcs. I mean, Judy makes a bad mistake with Nick, then she has to redeem herself. Nick himself is sort of in need of redemption. Gideon needs redemption. You have a whole bunch of redemption arcs going on throughout the film. You actually only see Gideon in his adult phase very briefly for one scene at the end of the film. So it looks like he's redeemed, but for all we know, he could still be a jerk.
But this is why we want to find out his backstory. Why did he all of a sudden work with the Hopps family now and all that sort of stuff? And remember before, you know, oh, we're going to give you a Fox Taser. You're going to need a Fox Taser. Oh, come on, when do you not need a Fox Taser?
One of the best lines in the movie.
Yeah.
One previous year, I made a list of, like, what are the top 10 funniest lines in Zootopia, and one of them was,
and then
when is there not a need for a Fox Taser?
And then there's weasels. You play cards with a weasel. Yeah, and he cheats like the devil.
Well, another thing I was going to say, you mentioned how great the scene in the gondola was. One of the first things I said at my very first Zootopia panel was invoking the legendary Western director John Ford's definition of what makes a great film. He said, three great scenes, no bad scenes. As far as I'm concerned, Zootopia doesn't have a single bad scene in it, but it's got a lot of great scenes, more than just three. So by that definition, it is a great film.
Yeah, and all the characters and everything like that. And again, people can change, or animals can change, and different things like that. And after a while, the more they get to know each other, so it's just great. Now, again, getting back to the whole universe and all that. Okay. Oh yeah. I found that was a comic collection, which is kind of rare, but it's around there. It whet our appetite into, you know, there's a whole bunch of these type of books here: Family Night and Hard Day's Work, and looking back at their childhoods, and you get to know them well. They're characters we all like for the most part. It's tough to say who you don't like, maybe Dawn or something. And even then, you may have a little sympathy for her or something like that. But the idea of this city, it's big, and yet in some ways you can go in an instant from the tundra town to the desert or something like that. So you have all these different things, and you have different animals in different parts. But that doesn't mean, you know, you might have some that you wouldn't expect, but you find up in living
in
different parts.
I was just talking about, you know, all the great scenes. For me, when I went to see this in the theater, I knew I had seen a very good film, the opening with the Carrot Day Festival, and then her at the police academy, that whole montage, and the farewell at the train station, which has the great Fox Taser line.
Yep.
But the moment I realized I was watching a great movie was that whole train trip from Bunnyboro.
Yep, how it changes so quickly. Yeah.
And what you were just referring to, at one point, the train goes through a tunnel. It's Sahara Square on one side, it's Tundra Town on the other. And if you look very closely, you can not only see these giant machines blowing the snow into Tundra Town, but you can see the heat waves of the heat exchangers blasting hot air into Sahara Square. So the whole thing is like this huge mechanism that we never get to see.
Now, you were talking about great lines from the movie. I think the best line in the entire movie was when Judy was trying to convict Nick of tax evasion. And she was like, but what do I know? I'm just a dumb bunny. But we are good at multiplying.
Yep.
although my single favorite line in the entire film is, did you just boot my stroller?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
When I saw it in the theater, I lost it. I said that. I was in tears.
There are some myths about rabbits and everything. I understand, supposedly, in real life, they don't necessarily like carrots. They might like the green part or whatever. But there was a famous moment. I don't know if it happened one night. There was some Cary Grant movie like that. And he's chewing on the carrot or something like that. And he's this real smooth character. And that got spoofed in a Bugs Bunny cartoon. And now everyone says, okay, rabbits like carrots. And they have this in the whole movie. And Cary Grant's personality became Slick Nick. You know, but again, it goes back to the fact that they were spoofing that movie for us. Everything Bugs Bunny, rabbit. They love carrots. You know, but they, in real life, they may not.
They only like the green parts because the orange parts of the carrots are actually toxic to them.
Oh, now that's interesting, yeah. So stereotypes, and that's a wrong stereotype, but somehow for all those Bugs Bunny cartoons, that's all you know about it. That's why they have all these things. What do you do? Oh, you must be a carrot farmer if you're in a... What was that line? And you live in what? That's in Podunk County. So you're going back to Bunny Road. Let me guess, you're a carrot farmer. Mm-hmm. And then he disappears. Yeah.
And you said the magic word, stereotype.
Yeah.
Which brings us to the main idea that the entire movie is about prejudice.
Yeah.
If you had to sum up what Zootopia is about in one word, that would be it. It's about the prejudice. And you see the prejudices of all the characters on display, from Bogo not thinking that a bunny can be a real cop, and he's not alone, but he's her boss, so he carries the most weight. You see Nick passing all these judgments out at Judy passing judgments about Nick, Judy's parents, Weaselton. I mean, it's all throughout the movie, every sort of stereotype. But they also have fun playing against stereotypes. Elephants are supposed to have great memories. So what do we get?
Yep.
Forgetful elephant.
Sloths are slow, except when they're in a sports car.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Great ending line.
All the faces that they made when he's like, hey, Priscilla.
Yeah.
What do you call? What do you call that face?
Right after Zootopia came out, Paco Panda did a cartoon that showed a smiling Gideon. You know, he's got a bakery. You know, he's serving Nick and Judy and everything. Oh, he's a great... And they're going, you're spoiling the ending. People don't... They haven't seen the movie yet. They don't realize that that's what happens. At the end, he becomes a great baker and all that, great person, great whatever, you know, great fox. But, you know, you're spoiling the movie. People haven't seen the movie yet. And by the way, the movie came out in March of 2016. All of a sudden, I read, oh, it's going to be out on video in June. 3 months?
Mm-hmm.
And I got it. That surprised me. But
The good news was I was able to get the DVD and watch it a few times before my first Zootopia panel, so I was really up on the movie.
Yeah. Well, I've said, you know, I said this in my panel over there, and I said it before you showed up, but I heard there were going to be early showings the day before. So it was supposed to be March 4th. Hey, if you get there on Thursday night, you can see the movie. All right. So I went to see it, and it turned out the sloth scene was pretty funny because in Danvers, Massachusetts, where the theater was, it was right around the corner from the Mass Registry of Motor Vehicles. And I thought it was perfect, the whole idea of it. And you know what? I've been in the Mass Registry of Motor Vehicles. They do have sloths working there. They do, you know, waiting in line. They're all sloths?
Easy now. That's prejudicial.
Why did they put the sloths in, you know, and people are waiting for hours? It's dark!
The most satisfying thing about that
bureaucracy
scene when they where the one sloth was pulling off that paper. And
oh, yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Like.
The sloth scene, when it was issued in advance of the movie, helped to sell the movie. When people saw that, they said, I think I'm going to see this. This is a funny movie.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's one of the... Yeah, go ahead.
I'm sorry to interrupt, but one thing that has been bugging me all throughout the movie, and I don't know if you guys had answered this question or not, but shouldn't Nick well have been charged with something, you know, in regards to the skunk butt ride? I think that would have been, like, homicide if skunks are considered citizens of Zootopia, right?
Yeah,
well, we did discuss that in an earlier panel, and we thought maybe waxing was the answer.
Yeah.
Here's your skunk fur.
By the way, in the novelization, I have both the novelization and the audiobook version. At the end, it refers to the Skunk Pride Parade. Is that poking a little something we just went through the last month, right? Pride Month? Is that saying something nasty about skunks? I don't know. But that's in it. If you, again, you can get the novelization. I have there's a woman who reads it. It's not Jennifer Goodwin, but I actually have that. And it's a good novelization. So, but it mentions Skunk Pride Month or something, parade.
I had not thought about that.
Well, skunks are cool. So.
Yeah.
But I wanted to say a couple more things about the DMV thing.
Yeah.
Because Zootopia does so many things that you would not expect an animated film to do, and that is a perfect example, because if you think about it, animation costs a lot of money to make. Every second that goes by, you're looking at a lot of money up on that screen. So the whole point is to pack as much action in as you can and go bam, 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 bam. And to have an entire 5 or 6 minutes of the movie dedicated to characters who are talking slowly is so counter to what is traditional about animation and what is traditionally accepted about animation.
Right, people are going to be bored by something like that. But that's actually part of the joke. There was a comedy team called Bob and Ray that talked about the slow talkers of America. Oh, so you get the idea. So that was the whole thing about that, yeah. But, you know, talking about how long it takes to make these movies and everything like that, the movie looked so real. It looked like real life, the detail, and all the strands of fur and everything. It looked, some people criticized, no, it looks real. It looks like it's actual real. Someone was, okay, over there.
One back to the prejudice thing, mostly stereotyping things. So, trying to guess, if you have the internet, or probably cable TV, and you watched the news about, probably about the same time, actually, the movie came out, I live in Flint, Michigan. Whenever I say that, what do you think is the first question people ask?
Well, I know about the dirty water there.
Correct, the water.
Yeah.
See, someone got
Michael Moore is from there. But yeah.
Almost every single time.
Yeah.
Chris Fenn, I'm also from Michigan, too, so yeah. I get it, too.
And the other one is probably my favorite. So this is kind of a more serious one for like one of my favorite like Judy Nick scenes. The one where Judy's under the bridge trying to convince Nick that she's been a bad friend. And what I like about that is, correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe I remember reading somewhere that her crying in that scene was not in the script.
Her what in the scene? Her
crying. Which is crying.
Oh, the crying, yeah.
Talking to Nick. If I recall, the crying is not in the script and animation is went with it.
Well, Jennifer Goodwin's performance is fantastic, which brings me to something that kind of miffs me off a little bit. The year after the film came out, when I did my second Zootopia panel, one of the things we focused on was all the awards the film had either been nominated for or had won, including the Annies, which had just been done a month or two before my second panel, the Animation Awards. And the thing that I took some issue with is Jason Bateman won for Best Male Actor in a Voice Performance. Jennifer Goodwin was not even nominated.
Oh.
And she carries that entire movie on her little bunny shoulders.
Mm.
Although she's actually got more shoulders than Nick does. Nick has like no shoulders.
Yeah.
That's crazy. I guess some award shows are a little biased, really. I mean, look at the Oscars.
The fact she wasn't even nominated implies that someone somewhere thought that there were 5 better female vocal performances for an animated film that year than Jennifer Goodwin's.
Yeah.
Seriously?
And by the way, for the Oscars, I believe it won Best Full-Length Animation Film, Zootopia did.
Yes.
And also, weren't there a whole bunch of movie poster parodies that were put out by Zootopia?
Yes.
La La Lam,
and
they had one that was spoofing Steve Paws instead of Steve Jobs, the Hibernant with the bear and everything. They had a whole bunch of spoofs of movie things.
One other thing about that one scene, I realized maybe a bit of ambiguity when I said, when the crime wasn't scripted, I don't mean she did it for a drama, I mean she actually broke down in the movie.
Oh.
So she was actually moved by the
She straight up, she basically had a mental breakdown while voice acting and then went with it.
Yeah.
Well, we benefited from it.
Yeah.
But on the subject of reviews and awards, one other thing I wanted to say is that I found it very interesting that halfway through the year of 2016, a newspaper in Atlantic City ran an article with the headline, "The best movies of 2016 so far, Zootopia and not much else." I saw that.
Score 1 for the furries.
I do admit the vast majority of furries do like Zootopia. I have seen a few, though, who said, nah, didn't like it. So you can't please everybody. But
I ran into one gentleman at the art dealer's reception one year, and I was talking to him about Zootopia, and he said, I didn't really care for the character design. And I thought, I think it's a wonderful design, but I mean, one of the how many people here are into the artist side of the fandom?
A little bit.
You know, go through the art show and look at the different dealers. That's what got me into the fandom in the first place. And there's just so many different great art styles of so many different types, ranging from very cartoony. I don't know if any of you here know Brian Reynolds.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
His work is great.
I just commissioned him to do a pack this week.
Yep, he did the commission for him. Yep.
There you go. I bought a couple of his stuff, a couple of things from his table. I've been buying his stuff.
Yeah, he did some stuff for the Funday Poppet Show, like some cartoons. Yeah, he did some great stuff. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So, but you got that incredible cartoony stuff, and you have like Dark Natasha's really naturalistic stuff. A couple of other artists.
Famous
stuff.
Author enters room.
Oh,
infamous author.
I'm on page 31 of Furry Nation. Go and buy it.
Okay, do you have it with you? I'll autograph it.
I don't have it with me. I even have the audiobook version of that. I'll have you know.
Yeah, somebody told me that instead of Uncle Kage, the guy says Uncle Cage.
Yeah, there's some people have said that. Oh, Uncle Cage. I said, no, it's pronounced Kage.
Yeah, I should have given them a pronunciation.
I'm guilty of that. The first year I attended AC, I was like, Uncle Cage, who's that?
I'm like, Cage, Kage, let's call it the Hall of Fame.
Yeah. I only ever, for about 6 months, I only ever saw it written down, so that's how I thought it was pronounced.
Yeah, well, if you don't hear it pronounced, you it's like, K-A-G-E.
I had a hand up, I watched Naruto, and how it was pronounced. Mm.
I was going to say, Joe Strike, his book Furry Nation, does have a whole bunch of mentions about how this particular con and Zootopia matter a lot to the furry fandom. So I think, check it out if you haven't already.
Yeah, I wrote a pony chapter for Furry Nation. There wasn't room for it. I just finished the Furry Planet manuscript. Hopefully, I put the chapter in there. Hopefully, the publishers, the editor will say, yeah, this can stay.
Yeah.
You know, they say, oh, this isn't furry enough. We'll see what, then I'll put it online for free. We'll see what happens.
Were you one of the writers for Furries Among Us?
No, I actually did not do an essay to that.
All right.
Sorry.
Oh, no problem. I read that book, and I just wasn't sure, because when they said, oh, famous author, I was thinking maybe
oh,
one
no.
of them that wrote an essay.
Furry Nation, Joe Strike.
Yeah. If they do maybe a sequel, maybe they'll ask me to do something. All
right.
Yeah, the Fur Science people asked me to do something for a book they have coming up, so anyway. All
right, thank you.
Sure. Sorry to burst in.
It's okay.
Well, no, I'm glad you're sitting in the front row.
Oh, thank you. Well, it's the only seat I could find. I was in earlier, but I was at the Fur Science thing, which is really fascinating.
I actually got here a few minutes late because I was, as you said, defending my business.
Yeah.
I did get stuck behind some fursuiters, but I was mostly late for defending my business.
Okay. Hmm. So. Oh, for the art show's closed?
It starts closing at 12. And you have to do that to defend your bids, which I usually am. But for the second time, they scheduled this panel opposite the closing of the art show. So I was like, bid, hope it stands up.
Now, the convention store doesn't close until 4 today, right?
Right. The dealer's den is still open. Oh, I'm sorry. It's not the dealer's den. It's the dealer's room. I don't think you're supposed to call it the dealer's den.
I still
do. Many of us do. Guilty as charged. Hmm. But back to Zootopia.
Yeah.
Yay.
I love your
Not to bring too somber a mood, but, and I don't know if you alluded to this before.
I might have, go ahead.
But moment of silence for Mr. Tiny Lister, who is no longer among us, the voice of Finnick. And he passed away, was it last year or earlier this year?
A couple of years ago, I think it was a couple years ago. And the news had just come out that he said something like they were going to work on a sequel or a TV show or something like that. And then next thing you know, he passed. Yeah,
he said
there was going to be two. Yeah.
Now, if I were a...
COVID 2 years ago.
Yeah.
If I were a conspiracy-minded person, I'd say, let's see, he leaked that there's going to be not one but two sequels, and then suddenly he's not here anymore.
Mm-hmm.
But it is sad. I secretly hope that if Disney is clandestinely working on a sequel or multiple sequels, that he was able to record some of his lines, at least for them, so that he'll be in it a little bit.
Yeah.
Because it wouldn't really be a Zootopia film without a little Finnick.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, a little Finnick. I made a pun there. I didn't even realize.
I heard you're doing like short segments that are going to pop up on Disney Plus.
We were talking about the Disney Plus. There are going to be six. We don't know how long they're going to be. They could be anywhere from 5 minutes to half an hour each.
Yeah, it says short form, so I would not expect much more than a half an hour. Who knows?
Now, do you think they would do like
a silence thing like they did with the voice actor who played as Philosophiles from Hercules. Because when Kingdom Hearts 3 came out, the voice actor, one of the voice actors was died. So when you seen Philosophiles in the Kingdom Hearts 3, he was quiet.
I thought Danny DeVito did Philosophiles.
I don't know.
I'm thinking
I never saw it. So. It was a Japanese voice actor for Philosophiles.
Oh.
He passed away. So when Kingdom Hearts 3 came out, they made Phil quiet.
Yeah. Oh, you know, I was just talking to my roomie who's out there handing out the raffle tickets. I had a round of applause for
Soggy. Yep.
I couldn't do this without him. Hi.
Okay. Hi.
Now
there
he
is.
Belatedly appears.
Yep.
He's Soggy Otto, but he wears a skunk hat. Don't ask him to explain.
But yeah, like I was saying, it would be a good thing to do if they did do a story about Finnick, if they made him silent, because he was pretty quiet throughout the beginning of the film.
Well, that's what I was just saying to Soggy this morning. I said, you could have another scene where he's doing the con like he was in the first thing, playing the part of a kid. But now that we know that's not really him, would it really work if we just saw him doing the con and he never got to speak as an adult?
I don't know. By the way, speaking of movies under development, sometimes they wind up getting canceled. And there's one that's referred to in the movie. Remember the whole thing about, we got DVDs that haven't even come out yet. Floats and whatever. Well, one of them was something called Jurassic. They were working on something called Gigantic, which was like Jack and the Beanstalk with a giant little girl, a giantess. And they looked around and they said, you know what? I don't think we're going to... We hit a wall. We don't know what to do with it. And they dropped the movie. So that reference is in the movie because they thought, oh, yeah, in a year or two, we'll have Gigantic out, but it's not going to come out, at least not soon. So that's an interesting little bit right there.
To be honest, I thought it was only because they just wanted to sell more like on the sequels for The Incredibles and Wreck-It Ralph. And we all know how...
Yeah, they were poking fun at everything. I have not seen Frozen, but we do know there was a big laugh about Let It Go. So
yeah,
that was promoting themselves. And I mean, like the Chip and Dale Rescue Rangers movie, they had a little bit of various references to Disney and to other studios as well. Some little jokes at their own expense, maybe.
I'm super excited about that, especially with the Kingdom Hearts reference they had in it, with the Keyblade up on the archive shelf. It was funny.
Yeah.
Yeah, when I heard there was going to be a Chip and Dale movie, I was like, oh, okay, who cares?
I myself, you know, I said, you know what, I got Disney Plus, I'm going to keep going because we know we're going to have Zootopia Plus coming anyway, and I thought, well, give me a shot. Wasn't that bad?
Well, as soon as I saw it,
and live-action animation mix like Roger Rabbit.
One was CGI and the other was going to be traditional animated. It's like, oh, you have the CGI surgery. I said, okay, what kind of movie is this going to be? It turns out it's very different from what I thought. It looks like they were just going to run with anything they wanted and make it a pure farce.
Well, I boycotted it because the whole premise of Peter Pan growing up.
Oh, I heard about that.
Yeah,
I know.
It's too much to real life, a real life tragedy.
Driscoll.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Anybody who knows that history,
right.
You know, most people won't, so it's just, ha-ha, funny gag, but it just left a bad
Well, my answer. Question, I've seen the clips that you're referring to. Yeah. Was that supposed to be the actual Peter Pan or just a Peter Pan-like character?
I think it's supposed to be the actual Peter Pan.
Okay, well, then that's...
He goes through puberty and whatever.
Yeah, that was very upsetting.
By the way, what did happen to Bobby Driscoll?
He killed himself. Was that a drug overdose?
He just never got his life back together again after they let him go because he had puberty or pimples or whatever. And, you know, that's his responsibility.
It's in his 30s or something. I don't know.
I'm not going to blame Disney for that, although they were kind of like pretty cold, just kind of loose like that. But it was his own fault for not keeping his life, getting his life back together. He died as a drug overdose in an abandoned building. He was buried in like an anonymous grave. And it took like a couple of years for his family to try to track him down, and that's when they discovered he was gone. So it's really a sad one.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I heard something similar happened to Cliff Edwick, who was the voice of Jiminy
Cricket.
Jiminy Cricket. Apparently, he was a very well-known radio personality, and that's why Disney hired him to do Jiminy Cricket.
Mm-hmm. He did have a radio voice, yeah.
But then they sort of like cut him off, and he drifted into obscurity and died penniless or something like that.
Oh, God.
So, yeah, there are some sad stories out there in the animation world.
If you give like 100% of the profits of Pinocchio,
As we were mentioning, we are looking forward to the series, and supposedly they're working on two more movies. I don't know how long they would take to come out, but what you said earlier about how long it takes movies. If you want something quality like what we saw, it's going to take a while. Or would you rather something like Hanna-Barbera or Filmation or just a little junky, you know, running around the same thing over and over and over the background or something like that? You want something like that. Now, we have had fan art and everything. We've had people make their own, what was it, Return to Zootopia? That some, it was a lot of still shots or maybe minor animation. People are thirsty for something, so they want to write their own. And they do have these type of books. These are about $8 or something. Hard Day's Work was one. I got this. I got maybe one or two others. So this will satisfy the curiosity because a lot of this might be, you know, Nick's childhood and everything. And keep in mind, there's an age difference. There are about 8 years age difference between the two of them. So all the people that might picture them both as being 9 or 10 years old, no. Yeah, there was an age difference.
Nick would have been a teenager when Judy was getting kicked in the face by Gideon.
Yeah, and again, this here I managed to find the Zootopia comic collection. It's gone out of print. Maybe if you look hard enough on eBay or something, you can find it. But
you know, I've never seen that, but I've seen the version that has the actual scenes from the films set up in the graphic novel.
Right.
And I was kind of disappointed in that because the quality of the photographs was so fuzzy. I think they're trying to do that effect intentionally to make it look little bit artistic and less like just scenes from the film, but I think it would have been better. Or maybe they're just cheating.
I think some of the books or something came out actually a month or two before the movie did, and people were talking about Clawhauser, and I'm saying, well, who's Clawhauser? I haven't seen the movie yet. It's not out yet. Oh, yeah, there's these little books out. So there already were things put out already.
Oh, you're kind of talking before about Prejudice. There's another one that they break. The Fat Cheetah.
Yeah. Fastest animal on earth. Oh, but you know, trying to go after...
don't give him too many donuts.
Yeah, trying to go after Mrs. Otterton. I try to catch her, but she's super slippery.
I gotta sit down.
I gotta sit down.
You know, on the subject of Clawhauser, you know, I've said this at past panels. I'm a little bit split. I think a little of Clawhauser goes a long way.
Yeah.
I think they find the perfect amount to use him in the movie because he's funny just up to a point. But a lot of people... fans at my past panel would say, oh, we want to see a lot more Clawhauser. I'm like, do you really? I'd like to see a little more Clawhauser, but you know, I think he's best in moderation. Back there.
One thing I'm curious about, any of you ever been to the DMV and, you know, when it comes your time to go up to the registrar, you are asked to go, have you ever, like, when you went to a restaurant, have you ever went / or New York? Have you ever made that reference?
They had someone at an RMV or DMV dressed, put the mask on at one point. So there was a picture of someone with a sloth mask.
Yeah.
They actually played upon it.
I think I may have mentioned that the last time I needed my license renewed, and the person at the counter zooming went right over their head. So I was like, all right, I'm not going to
see it. I made that reference like 5 years ago when I was at the DMV.
Yeah.
With the person I got, I mean, he knew the reference right away. He chuckled.
Yeah.
I wonder how many times, you know, these people have gotten that reference. You know, not just fans from Zootopia in general, but, you know, others. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I wish I had gotten an attendant at the DMV that was as hip as yours.
Yeah.
I got here late, so I'm wondering if the subject of how did this peace treaty come about between the prey and the animals and the predator animals?
We have not talked about that, and I'm not sure the movie has ever explained
they
that.
They just have this little, like, school play thing.
Right.
Yeah.
But that's got to be, like, an epic story of its own, how they achieve peace.
Well, there might have been, in fact, you might know this better than I, but there might have been a scene when Nick and Judy at the end of the film were running through the Natural History Museum.
Right, yeah. Yeah. Back in the days, yeah.
May have shown
I will have
things
to freeze frame through that.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, they're going through that. So there's so much history in the past like that, you know, the whole, how did they settle things and everything like that?
Yeah.
And what's it like on other continents? Now, we mentioned earlier, on other continents, you may have birds, you may have lizards or whatever. Do they have a peace between predators and prey? Or do you, you know, what like between lizards that? Or whatever, do you have that? Or do you have total mayhem?
Well, that's an epic fanfic idea of my own. And we remember fanfics.
Yeah.
We'll get to that in a moment.
I got one of my own, but anyway, one of the directors said that he wants to visit Outback Island.
Hmm. Okay.
So that's where you get your marsupials, I guess, if they ever get there. I'm just, one of the things I like about the movie itself, because you think they're going to make the reptiles the bad guys, because that's such a cliche. And
I would love that.
Yeah, well, it's part-time.
If it's done right.
Well, as a part-time reptile myself, I kind of, you know, it's not, yeah, you know, the rats and the weasels and all those guys, you know.
Well, if you have one bad reptile who comes to Zootopia and does bad things, you can still have some good ones over there.
Yeah, I guess so.
Like a greener pasture sort of story.
Possible.
I don't know, but there's one species that you definitely don't, of mammal, you don't see in Zootopia, human beings. Oh. They never existed. And people have done fan fiction, and they're like, no, they don't exist. Sorry. They do not exist in the Zootopia universe. At least not as we know.
The very first trailer for the film said, what if humans had never existed? So that was the premise they were working with, a world where humans never existed.
Well, that's an easy fix, though. Live in the Marvel Universe and get Doctor Strange to send you there.
Exactly. I'm actually on a Discord group with someone who is very, very much into that, and they're big fans of Secret of Nim. I'm sure we have some Nim fans in here. And they want to do an epic crossover where the rats were actually the result of some Marvel Black Ops operation, and the magic stone from the movie was actually like something similar to what Thanos was going after, and I'm just like, okay, dude, write it. You know, stop talking about it and write it. Maybe I'll read it. Yes.
Recently, a video game that I love was announced called Kingdom Hearts 4. Do you think it's possible we'll get a Zootopia bubble in that game?
Well, I think we have a big Kingdom Hearts fan right here.
I don't know if y'all played the game, but would you get the game even just for that level to be actually in Zootopia and interact with Nick and Judy and the cats?
Well,
I don't know. I'm not familiar, so I'm a little too old for that.
My video game,
at least I don't go into it.
Yeah.
All right,
Ms. Pac-Man.
So, about fan theories, what do you think of the fan theory that Robin Hood is an ancestor to Nick Wilde?
Yeah. Why not?
Color scheme, green shirt or something?
Kind of hinted, oh, that's fun. They've kind of been kind of playful with that theory.
Yeah. Didn't they confirm that the two movies exist in the same universe, though?
You would think it exists in the same universe.
On one level, I love that idea, but on another, if you look at Robin Hood, it takes place in an animalized version of the human world. They still have England, they still have Spain.
That's true.
They still have the Crusades, so they're following our history, whereas in Zootopia, it's been sort of implied they have an entirely novel history of their own that has nothing to do with our history. So that's a bit of a stumbling block.
Not to mention the
fact that... Not if you incorporate the multiverse theory.
Oh, we're back to the multiverse.
Oh, and also,
Doctor Strange, where are you?
Also, they could have had a history to where there was the whole prey and predator thing, and it kind of messed up the nations, and they just decided to make a new nation or something like that. You could do that as well, like a Great Evolutionary War or something like that.
Well, you know, it's funny. One of the comics that got me into the whole furry fandom, and I almost hesitate to mention it at an all-ages appropriate panel, is Dave Hopkins' Jack. I don't know if anyone here is familiar with it. But Jack is the green bunny of death. He's like the furry world's Grim Reaper. And the backstory is that all the animal characters in the comic were biological constructs created by the humans. And Jack was the one who turned on them and started a nuclear war that wiped out humanity. And then, with all the humans gone, but once the humans were gone, they started reenacting human history over again, right down to the different eras and different countries. So they had the Crusades again, they had the Middle Ages again, but this time with all the furry characters. And it was pretty interesting, but I don't know how well thought out it was, but it was intriguing.
What about graphic novels? Has anybody heard of the graphic novel, wordless graphic novel, Fox Bunny Funny? I picked that up at a convention a couple years ago. It's all, no dialogue, it's all done pure black and white, so a very interesting art style. But it's about a world where, you know, both the rabbits and the foxes are sentient, and it's perfectly normal, natural for the foxes to go after hunt the rabbits. So, you know, it's like just totally acceptable. They can go kill him or whatever. And it begins about the protagonist as a kid. You see, he sneaks home. He's got something. And, you know, his mother doesn't know what's going on. So she opens his door. And the fox is in a bunny suit jumping up and down in front of the mirror. And the rest of the book is that, well, they're going to reform him. They're going to make him into a full-blooded fox. And it's really a damn good book.
Actually, I forget the year, but we had Bill Holbrook as guest of honor, and he did Kevin and Kel, long-running webcomic, mixed family. You've got a a rabbit there, the big huge Kevin, the huge
rabbit's the
bunny.
Father, the wolf is the
mother and everything like that. And she works for Herd Thinners Incorporated. She's got a natural wolf son. And then there's like, is it a carnivorous rabbit baby or something?
I think so. Something like that.
Yeah. So it's kind of the whole thing about herd thinners and, you know, predators and prey.
Bill Holbrook is down in the deal.
He is. I did see him. Yeah, he's doing commissions. Yeah.
And if you're not familiar, check him out.
Speaking of fan fics, I was curious to know if you guys have ever heard of the fan film Return to Zootopia.
Yeah, I mentioned it earlier. It's on YouTube, and I think a lot of it is still pictures or very limited animation. And yeah, it's like an hour and a half long or something.
I think I started watching once and I only got a few minutes in, and I'm like, oh, I'll come back to this when I have more time.
I thought it was, well, for lack of having anything, you know, official, you know. Well, it's a bootleg, really, in a way.
That's what I wanted to say, now that we're fan talking fiction. About is the last panel we did, which is 2019, I can't believe it's been 3 years. We actually had one of the guests of honor that year, Steve Galacci, bless us by agreeing to come up and share the panel with us.
It's on YouTube. Yeah.
And Steve Galacci is in Alberto and Vermont.
Yep. There's video of it on YouTube if you want to catch it.
So he was sharing the table with us, and he is a huge fan of Zootopia, which is why he agreed to do it. And he has written quite a few Zootopia fanfics. And so a big portion of our 90-minute runtime was taken up by discussion of fanfiction. And one point I made at that time was it underscores just how much this film has grabbed onto the imagination of the fandom, and I think even people outside this fandom who have started churning out fanfiction of their own, just how much it's reached them and struck them. I think within just a few months of the film's release, Zootopia was the 20th highest-ranking movie title on fanfiction.net, and there were like thousands of Zootopia fics written, and it's only continued on. Yes?
So on the concept of Zootopia fanfiction, I've come across a few interesting ones, and what's the official stance on hybrids in the Zootopia universe? Like,
my official stance has no officiality at all, because I'm just a fan like you guys. I don't know. I've heard that when the film was in production, the animators and writers used to joke about foxes and funnies instead of foxes and bunnies. So if Nick and Judy ever got together and were able to create offspring, you would have some hybrid. But again, I think that was just unofficial. It was just them talking and joking.
All right, is there any Beastar fans in here?
A little bit.
I've seen them.
Do you also read the manga? All right, yeah. which volume are you guys on?
I completed it.
All right. Well, I don't want to spoil anything, but there are some hybrids in Beastars, and I was wondering if maybe Zootopia would take a turn down that kind of route.
First of all, I think it would depend on whether we get a full-fledged sequel, because I don't think the shorts that are coming up would...
Yeah.
We are.
Well, I mean, supposedly, yeah.
Is anybody talking about, like, hybrid offspring? Anybody know an online comic strip called My Cage? I've been following that for years, and it's in a world. It's a funny animal world, I think, in one of the humans are extinct kind of thing. And the main character is a platypus named Norm, who has this grind office job, but he wants to do creative stuff, and he's never going to have a chance. And he's married to a very cute dog lady, and they have a little kid, I guess dog platypus hybrid, with another one on the way. But I support it on Patreon, and I really recommend it. It's some real funny stuff. They were actually commercially syndicated for quite a few years. So on the Patreon, they reprint the old strips, and every now and then they'll have a new strip with the same character.
And what's the name of it?
It's called My Cage. It came out when MySpace was big.
My Cage.
Yeah. My favorite one was when they go to the zoo. They take their little baby to the zoo, and the animals on display are all anthro animals. And one's like, oh, thank God, call the police, get me some pants. And the other one is like, oh, she put something in my drink. I woke up here, she put something in my drink. And the last guy is like, oh, man, this is great. This is better than my job and my apartment. You know, so it's that's one of my favorite strips they've done. So
this might be a hybrid. John Peterson's books, The Littles, that were made into the TV series, The Littles, they're like borrower size, but you notice they have like rodent-like teeth and ears and everything, and tails. Mm-hmm. How did that come about? How do they, are human and rodent mixed? How is that a hybrid type thing, The Littles?
In a very interesting way.
We are the Littles.
Yes.
I had a more interesting question for you guys. As much as, you know, we're furry and we're drawn to that, and we thought this is going to be a fun movie, One of the things that Zootopia I really liked, and I think other people liked, was it got into some very serious themes that reflected our society that I did not expect. Like, if I'm being honest, that scene near, you know, as it reaches the climax where Judy was on the train and the tiger sat down and the bunny.
I know exactly.
That has happened to me in real life several times.
Yeah,
that really struck me.
I was talking earlier about it too, because I've come from a small town, a red state, and I have rednecks tell me to go back to Africa.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
So
don't get me started.
Yeah.
Why not?
So with all that, I also have to wonder, and this is someone who adores the film, adores the characters, with the real world being kind of what it is, what type of themes do you think they would or may not get into in the sequel? Especially with cops being such a heavy theme in this, and the way that we're kind of looking at cops now.
Especially, I think, in the sequel, if you do focus on sociological issues and political things, it's going to be about their law system, their courts, and the presidency, for sure. They would cover something like that.
Well, if you think about it, this is the first time I've done one of these panels since the George Floyd incident, and that has rocked this whole country. And
with the past election, and you got people that are threatening and trying to take away rights.
January 6th? January 6th.
Yeah,
Just looking at the, when you see the original ideas they have for it, like the whole, it was almost a police state for the Predators. Like, just looking at that and then applying that to everything going on.
That was the original concept for the movie. I would love to read the script for that. Because, I mean, that was the only resolution to that idea that the Predators are, like, sort of kept under control with shock collars. The only resolution that would have been, like, some sort of violent revolution. And I know the filmmakers were actually kind of disappointed they couldn't take it that route, you know. But Lasseter, people said, oh, no, it makes the city a horrible place. You want to make the city fascinating.
Well, you actually did talk about that before you came in. I've often thought it might have been fascinating to see that film done to its conclusion. Mm-hmm. You might have ended up something with like a furry version of Blade Runner, where you just were not enamored of the city. The city was like the bad place that was oppressing the people, and maybe it would have ended with Nick getting out of the city like Harrison Ford does in Blade Runner and just going to live in the country somewhere.
And then you have a sequel that made no sense compared to the original.
But as far as what could be in a possible sequel, you know, I've talked about this in my previous panels. Can you make it about prejudice again? Because that's so much what the first film was about. On the one hand, you can't ignore it. I mean, it's been brought up so front and center. You can't just wave a magic wand and say, okay, we're going to make a Zootopia sequel that doesn't mention prejudice at all. I mean, it has to be there.
Maybe a throwaway line, an insult towards Nick, and they just sort of, you know, give the guy a
I think it would need to be more than a throwaway line. It would need to be part of the film, but doesn't have to be what the whole film was about in the way that the first film was about. Yeah.
Adding on to his idea, I think it would be great if they did focusing on like police brutality and stuff within their society. They can make a sequel where the town turns against the Zootopia police squad and stuff like that, and then there would be a whole new change in story arc with that and new revelations coming out.
Well, that's a big dilemma that the writers of any sequel would face.
Yeah.
I mean, it is a pro-police movie. One thing I've talked about in the previous panels was how many young people saw Zootopia and wanted to become police officers as a result of that.
Yeah.
So it's pro-police, but at the same time, it also looks at, I mean, Bogo is a real hard-ass. I've said before, Bogo is actually one of my favorite characters
in
the film.
Yeah.
When the first time I saw the film, I did not like him at all as the film was introducing him. I didn't think he was, I don't know what about his character wasn't working, but by the end of the film, he had become one of my favorite characters.
What drew me to Chief Bogo was that he seems like a real hard ass and someone who's judgmental about, like, with Judy and stuff. And then you see that he's got a soft side when he's watching Gazelle's video and his off. Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
Not just a soft side, but a funny side.
And
if you look at the pics for the Zootopia Plus, he's definitely doing some hard to record.
Yes.
That's right.
Oh, yeah. So that's who the other character is, and it's going to be more.
Trust is hard to earn, but when you have it, you have it.
Yes.
And the scene with Gazelle really puts forth the idea that he's projecting this unapproachable strength of this is what we have to be police officers, but it's sort of a mask he's put on.
Now,
but
what about
like that awesome pose? At
one. Now back to the whole police brutality thing. I wouldn't think it would be so far fetched for them to address it in a sequel because you see how the citizens treated Judy as a meter maid.
In fact, not only do I think it would not be a problem addressing, I think they could make it a big part of the movie, or at least a subplot.
Yeah.
I mean, Nick and Judy are going to be out. I mean, they're the small mammals, but they still have to have weapons, they still have to have arms, they still have to be able to defend themselves, just as the bigger ones do. What happens if they get into a situation where they're forced to use force that they necessarily didn't want to use, or maybe they find out afterwards it was uncalled for and they shouldn't have used that?
Now,
this idea of Nick becoming, he moves away from the regular beat and he becomes like a detective or like a private eye. That's how I kind of saw Nick progressing, because I don't always foresee him going just the regular cop.
There was that whole training montage at the beginning where she's in like police academy and she's like, Judy's like beating up rhinos and whatnot. So we know she has the skills if it ever came to her.
True.
But it was just kind of mentioned and then never brought up again.
And they talk about first rabbit officer. Shouldn't there be like mice officers in Little Rodentia? Shouldn't they have their own force? You know?
That's crazy.
I would think they would have that or something.
Maybe this is like big animals.
Maybe that's kind of relates to our real life when you think about it. Like the only predators are doing cops in the same way that for most of American history, most cops were Irish. That was the only ones really available.
I'm also watching
Google
the Irish
comedy. And when they show that scene of Little Rodentia, it's friggin' huge. It's like the size of New York City. My God, they could do so much with that. But how does the Zootopia police handle Little Rodentia when you have the big, huge cops that are rhinos or whatever, and they can't even get through that gate? Although you can get through the gate if you're a rabbit with, you know.
Well, I think the unspoken assumption would be what you just said. They would have to have cops that we haven't seen.
Yeah.
Maybe they have like a Little Rodentia district or precinct, and that or as I said, maybe it's so corrupt that Mr. Big just handles all the security there.
And yet,
it's very possible. You know that, and of course, in real life, the mob, their areas, cops, if they treaded at all, obeyed this, you know, the mob boss. So it's not unheard of that. They also have the polar bears too. Like they just have the polar bears for anything big and anything else. The rodents.
Subject of that, obviously, at the end of the film, you see that a couple of Bellwether's henchmen, are actually cops. You know, sheep cops on the ZBD. So they had infiltrated the ZBD to some extent.
And some of the people, the rodents or whatever from Little Rodentia will actually go into the big parts of town. At one point, Judy gives a ticket to a little mouse. Really nice lady, or whatever like that. And then later on, she's got all the papers and everything, and she almost steps on a mouse. Oh, excuse me. So sometimes they actually will be among the bigger animals. Well,
by the way, someone has speculated on that scene where she's helping Bellwether. The mouse actually gives her a finger, but it's done so subtly you can't really, because you see him raise his paw, but you can't really see it clearly. So
that's something I wonder about the Zootopia world as a whole. How they not have like fatalities with bigger animals stepping.
That's why I was thinking that when you're talking about like that. Is it a crime if they accidentally step? Like, say if there's an elephant or a hippo citizen. And then there's a rodent in front of them, the accident.
And one of the deleted scenes, by the way, talking about a size difference, is, well, you can use this computer. It's an elephant's computer, and she's like this on the keys and everything.
I love that scene. She's stretched out.
Yep. Control, alternate, delete.
Three keys, like the worst part of the movie.
Yeah.
It's like doing anything in Word.
As far as accidentally killing a fellow mammal, I guess would be
mammal slaughter.
There'd have to be a lot of that with them driving on the roads with the bigger cars and just traveling along the streets.
Well, one of the things that I did in one of my previous panels was like the most cartoony things about Zootopia, because, you know, it's very realistic on some levels, but there's a lot of traditional cartoon humor. And I think the whole concept of some of the stuff you're talking about might fall under the cartoony stuff.
And in the trains, there's different doors for the different sized animals, including mice or whatever.
The turtles and stuff,
I mean, they obviously put a lot of work and thought into creating a city where all the mammals could live together. But logistically, it would take a lot to make it.
And there's a mouse in an apartment with like a habit trail type thing.
Yeah.
You know, exercise thing. Yeah.
Question. Way back.
That was something I always thought was interesting about the entire design of the city. It is not practical, and not just in that they're going for cartoon gags, but they think it's okay to let the people from Little Rodentia mingle and run whatever.
Yes.
They design the city.
Maybe the laws are written in such a way that if you live in Little Rodentia and want to venture out into the other parts, you do it at your own risk and you assume no liability.
Yeah. And speaking that would make more sense with them, with the accidental steppings and stuff like that.
Speaking of such legal matters, there actually was a panel.
That's what I was about to say. Boozy Badger, Law and O'Order. I went to it. It's on YouTube if you missed it. So Lauren O'Water with Boozy Badger.
So we did a Zootopia panel talking about nothing but the legal aspects of the society of Zootopia. And I actually got into it a little bit with Boozy. Yeah. Of course, it's Boozy. He knows the law. He'll smack you down. But I engaged him anyway. He's like, you would be completely wrong about that, and here's why. Yes.
Another thing said, I think like any story involves like in terms of like animal characters is that usually the ones that are always left out are like the insects and the aquatic animals. Like
insects and aquatic animals are food for the mammals, so I don't think you're gonna see a bug slave. Although
the fleas on Nick Wilde's fur have gone on strike today, and
you know what I was talking about.
Easy for me to say. Yeah.
They did say there was a delousing when Judy got to.
Oh yeah, complimentary delousing.
Yes. Yeah. I think a great line in a fanfic or a sequel would be something like, "Judy, stop crying over that movie, Little Nemo. Fish can't really talk."
But also like some of the aquatic mammals though, like the dolphins, the orcas.
Well, that's true.
Yeah, because Zootopia is like a place for mammals. You would think there'd be whales and stuff there too.
Yeah, but it would be whales. Kind of they playing on like something like Atlantis maybe or something.
Something like that. Well, I think it would be cute. You were talking about habit trail things for the Little Rodentia. Maybe there are parts of Zootopia where you have like these big pipes that the dolphins can swim.
Yeah. And by the way, if anyone has the book The Art of Zootopia, the beginning and the end of it has a whole bunch of like logos for things like Kodiak Donuttery, which is like, you know, a bear and it's like a donut shop, and then a Hoof Locker, and you know what I mean? They're all spoofs of that.
I wish I could remember more of them. But
if you look hard enough, there's First National Bank, FURST. Mm-hmm. There's different Mouster Charge, I think, was another one. We've talked before about Mousies, Targoat, and things like that.
Well, you see signs for some of them up in the city in the movie itself, but this expands.
The weirdest thing I saw was a spoof ad for 50 Shades of Prey.
Oh, yeah.
I didn't think they'd go that direction, but there it is.
They've been somewhat risque. They know who the audience is. You can tell it does, like the nudist scene was very something very, or like even like when you saw Nick and the deleted scenes talking about how Judy's parents should just leave them and go have another baby, like you constantly
256
see
kids
little hints of, oh wow, they really are messaging the furry community in this.
Oh, totally.
Oh, and that the beginning where Stu, where Stu and
you and your other 200 whatever.
Yeah, it's like we settled hard.
I love that line. We settled hard.
Notice that, by the way, it's not just bunnies and bunnyboro. You have foxes, and you have other black-footed black-footed ferrets.
I was going to say the whole nudist scene was just so meta.
Oh, yeah.
Because you see the animals with their clothes off and they look like cartoon animals to us. But in the context of their universe, it's so shocking, even though nothing's showing.
That's the thing about, it's weird. Animals wearing clothes. That is like so meta.
And
I will say one voice, of the things about the film that disturbed me.
Voiced by a comedian known for drug humor, Tommy John.
Exactly. Yeah. One of the few things about
Gabe's
the
not here, man.
Was yaks. I mean, the flies buzz. Every time that scene happened, I'm just like, that's gross.
It was inevitable. I mean, Cheech already did Tito back in Oliver and Company, so it was only a matter of time before they got chopped.
Right.
And now they both have furry characters.
And Cheech was in The Lion King, too.
Right.
Yeah.
So yes, too.
Along with Whoopi.
Yeah.
It's
about 20 of. Were we going to do any things like trivia or giveaways or anything? Because I think we're here till 1, right? We're here, it's an hour and a half panel, right?
We went to the trouble of making the raffle tickets. And again, a big hand to Saji. He took care of that because. We did not have real actual tickets, so he was up in the room tearing paper with tiny slips and writing out the numbers, so he gets the credit for that. But again, it underscores just how much there is to talk about this film, that we are now into the final 15 minutes, and we could probably talk on for another hour and a half and find stuff to say about this wonderful film. It's just such a gift to our fandom. Mm-hmm. And I love that it's such a huge success outside our fandom.
The
as
film
well.
Was marketed to furries. That's what people think. Was it marketed to furries on purpose?
Well, Disney will never tell us. Nothing you've seen be
furries.
Yeah.
That was pretty bad.
I'm going to be very interested in the closing ceremonies later to see what this year's attendance actually was. Because we've had 2 years without an AnthroCon, and a lot of people are saying, well, are people still going to be leery of the pandemic? I think we might have hit a record. I mean, this might be a record year of attendance. And it might partly be because of the pent-up demand for not having the con for 2 years, but it might also be because I think, and the reaction to the furry block party and parade yesterday might underscore this, I think the furry fandom is just getting out there more.
More
people are becoming aware of it, more accepting of it. Mm-hmm.
Well, it just seemed to me like every single week there's a con. Everyone's talking about, oh, I went to this con. Oh, yeah, next week I'm going to this con. Then I'm going to this con. I remember there were maybe four cons in the whole country, you know? I mean, or something.
Con of the week.
Yeah, I just came from the first science panel, and I suggested a question because writing the book and just talking to people, being great muscle, like 95% of the people I know had an interest in anthropomorphic animals before they discovered furry fandom existed. How many people had that? I'm just curious.
Yeah.
Okay, but, oh yeah, so just about everybody. But, like at the rave last night, so many young people, and I'm wondering if furry is no longer as negative thing, and somebody can say to their friend, oh, I'll go to a furry convention, and instead of saying, oh, you're sick, the friend, oh, I've heard about that. What's that like?
For years,
it's like a cartoon convention.
People saying, how do I come out to my parents as furry? And that conversation is not happening as much anymore. In fact, sometimes it's the parents who get into it and get their kids into it. But even when it's the other way around, kids aren't like, oh, I have to come out. It's like, oh, mom, dad, look what I'm interested in. And I think it is becoming more accepted. And as someone who has you've attended every AnthroCon going back to
97.
But I've been to everyone since 2004. And one thing I've definitely noticed, and I've mentioned this in past panels, when I first started attending, it was almost all adult and teenage attendance. You saw hardly any children, hardly any families. Mm-hmm. And the last few years, it's swung hard, and you're getting a lot more families.
Yeah.
Again, I don't know if it's long-time people who are furries having kids and bringing their kids, or whether it's the kids not knowing any stigma or onus that had been placed on the fandom before are now talking to their parents more openly about it. Mm-hmm. And it's just like, oh, this is this thing I'm interested in. I want to find out more about.
Yeah, I read the story of a new story or a feature thing by a mom whose daughter wanted to go to furry convention. Oh, I heard that. Oh, no, mom, that's all blah, blah, blah. And so the mother went with the daughter, and she had a wonderful time. She said, oh, it's like being in a Ghibli film.
That's a way to look at it. Well, one thing that I've heard saying for several years now is that Disney likes to pride itself as being the happiest place on earth. I say, for one weekend each year, Pittsburgh becomes the happiest place on earth.
Pittsburgh is my laughing place. Very rabbit, laughing place.
I think there's one last question.
Good.
Squeeze it.
I just want to say, back to the attendance thing. So, was anybody at the Soul to First Burcon panel?
No, this is my first AnthroCon.
So, same here. It's my second overall con. I was at that panel. And so, a few people at High were talking about, they don't have all the numbers in because obviously out-the-door registration is still available, I think until pretty much basically an hour before closing ceremonies, actually. So they'll have all the numbers in, but they're estimating that, yes, we will break MFF 2019. So
We beat them already in a way by just a hair, but now it's going to be pretty noticeable.
Yeah, everyone was talking about 10,000 as the expected attendance this year. I think it might be well above.
Fursuit Parade having more than most cons for having total attendance.
Like, Michigan State rivalry, but only...
my dad actually teaches for Michigan. I love people would know.
Well, the first convention I attended, and you can definitely beat me on this, first convention I attended, only about 10% of the attendees were suitors, and the entire convention was only about 1,000 people.
500 people in 97 at the Omni in Albany.
So right now we have more first suitors than we had in the entire convention when I started going to AnthroCon.
And I dashed out real quick. I dashed outside to get the crowd reaction. What a feeling to hear all that cheering.
Absolutely.
Yes, that's great. Sorry. When the furries start coming and the crowd cheers.
They love us.
And you know, the first year they did the parade where they started coming in outside, like, are we making a big mistake? How is this going to go over? And it's become one of the hallmark parts of the weekend.
Oh, the city loves us. They look forward to us.
Right, I keep saying one last question.
Love us. Not as much money as we spend in this city. They better love us.
Oh, yeah?
That's what a lot of people said. They just want their money. But no, they love us. Yeah.
Back to the panel I was at. The block party was an Aria. It was a gift from the city.
Yeah. The city came to us. They said, you ought to come here and have your convention. And Coggy took a tour and everything. And next thing you know, hey.
In the book, Furry Nation, Coggy talks about how they came to him.
Right.
They said with like folders of bones and stuff. Even the stuff we don't like to talk to people about, they knew about already. So it's definitely open-minded on their part.
We needed a new home after Philly anyway because we lost our hotel and everything. But yeah.
Oh, yeah. And now Philadelphia, so they've got their own
right.
Time.
Yeah. Which I'm going to. I'm going to that and Anthro New England and FurPoc. So not everyone will like every single convention, but I go to these four.
Yeah, I'd like to go to Furthermore because that's where we're going.
I haven't been to Furthermore, no.
They're too close together. I need some cool down time.
Yeah. Yeah, I was in Baltimore one year and I saw a bunch of people that I thought were furries. They were bronies. They were there for the BronyCon or something. They go, oh, I recognize these people. I've seen them at the,
Some of the bronies have shown up here in the past.
Yeah.
So who wants to keep talking about Zootopia or who wants to have stuff given away?
Let's do both.
Both.
I just want to add one thing. The thing that I love want to know more like in Zootopia or like any universe or furries whatsoever is more like the cultural levels. Like anything you guys want to see more like in a cultural level, like it would be like anything is like the stereotypes and talk about, because like there was one thing I always wanted to do. Concerning that it's like the cocoon is like some of the tourists are burning dead and like certain times like seeing as like a negative stereotype is like trash banded or anything like that.
Well, first we have had raccoons. I don't think we saw any raccoons in the first one, but I love. Although maybe has become so popular that might work against seeing raccoons in Zootopia.
In Japan, some people thought it was a tanuki. Some said it was a raccoon. I think if you look close during the press conference scene, you might briefly see the raccoon that was the newscaster in Japan shows up there, and you know what I mean. The different ones do show up in that scene.
So
I think it's tough, but a tanuki is really a raccoon dog. It's not the same thing. But I guess Zootopia Crime Files had a raccoon with a mustache, I guess.
The keeper of the
raffle
tags must come forward at this point. By the way, anyone, I meant to put this out right when I got here and I forgot, but here's a nice picture of Judy Hopps by Ink Tiger.
Oh.
No, this is not for sale. This goes on with me. But there will be other things.
Okay, a few people left, so nobody responds.
Oh, okay, rules. Number one, only one prize per attendee.
If somebody gave you their ticket when they walked out, you only get one prize.
Right, if you win both. Number two, all decisions final. Number three, you must be present to win. I assume you're all present?
most of the time.
All right. Do you want to do the honors or shall I?
I'll do the first. Is it more than one? Just one?
No, there are a bunch.
There's a bunch? Okay.
A bunch. We'll have several happy people leaving here today.
Number 108.
Hopefully you'll all be happy.
108? Anyone? 108? Did we already have someone who left?
Or did 108 remain here? Soggy, you're not in the raffle. You can't win.
he gave me a nice Mr. Otterton, by the way. That was nice. Thank you again. I have Mr. Otterton at home. 72. Bingo. 72. Someone's got 72. All right.
Okay, the first prize we will be giving away, I'm sorry, but they get progressively better. So you win the little Finnick van.
Oh.
Okay. Oh, cool.
At least I think they get progressively better. Maybe I just gave out the best one. I don't know.
All right, Peter, Tommy Lister Jr., we miss you.
Yes.
Yep.
Yeah.
He was the one that helped drive the team.
All right. He'll bite your face off.
I've never done this before. My fifth Zootopia panel, I've never actually drawn a number. 102.
Bingo.
Oh,
back
the car
there.
Goes up in the back.
All right.
102. You're getting a box of whatever these are. Soggy bought this one, so.
I just think it's really funny. He's given out 200 tickets before noon and not got two.
No, I went overboard.
Okay, your turn.
Okay. This one is 106. 106, all right. Mr. Cyan.
All right, we are into the plushies now.
Cyan gets a plushie.
So you're the plushie.
It's a... Which one do you think? I think the Finnick goes next.
Ah! There you go.
Ooh, it might be a character too.
Let's see. I'm not looking. I'm pulling out number 97.
Right
to
the left, really.
You got 97?
Over there? 97?
Yep.
You get Judy.
Judy.
Oh, I wonder who could be left in here.
Nick, maybe?
No, no. Okay, well, I'm going to let you decide.
Okay. Oh, what is that? Big piece of paper?
Just one.
I know. I'm just trying for one. 96. 96. 96 tears. All right. So use the old song. 96.
What did he win?
Yeah, he's holding it. 96.
You get a mummified Nick Wine. What's left? Oh, okay. This one's going to take a little while, so let me see who wins this one, and then I'll explain it a bit. This was going to be our grand prize, and it was going to go to number 105.
Do we have a 105?
Do we have a 105? At 105, okay.
Yep.
You get a batch of Zootopia greeting cards. Cool. And you probably think to yourself, why would that be good enough to qualify as the grand prize? Well, some of them have magnets in them.
Ooh.
And some of them unfold to become a poster. And you get, the best of all, you get at least two copies of each one. So you can keep a copy of one and then send the rest to your friends to show them how cool you are. Zootopia is cool. So, I just got these a little messed up, but we can give them all to you. You get a bag to keep them in, and enjoy.
Thank you very much.
And now we get to the actual grand prize. I'm going to let Soggy pick this one. Pick well, Soggy.
89.
Woo!
Oh, okay. You won Nick Wilde. It's a Damaku, or however you pronounce it.
I got 601. I never picked that one.
601? I don't think we expected 600.
Oh, wait, it's 109.
I
underlined every one of them so you know which side is up.
I was just playing.
So anyway, well, thank you all for coming. That is
thank
Zootopia
you.
Fan discussion.
Yeah.
Will we do it again next year?
Oh,
well,
yes.
We'll see how well that Disney Plus show turned out. We didn't even get a chance to talk about the bad guys. Which
talk briefly if you want.
I actually watched the bad guys.
I did
about a week ago.
Uh-huh. That's when it first came out.
You know what's really weird? Only the bad guys and the senator or the governor was Fox. Everyone else was human.
Yeah, they were very cool.
That was so bizarre. I couldn't figure that out.
Like BoJack, where it's like...
Well, you know, when the very first Zootopia trailer came out, and it was the one with the white background and Nick getting shot by the tranquilizer and falling from the sky, I really thought it was going to be like Wile E. Coyote in the Big City. I thought it was going to be a pure comedy farce. And the bad guys was actually more like what I was expecting from Zootopia when I first started hearing about Zootopia. And Zootopia, obviously, is so much more. I mean, the difference is one is an animated film and one's a cartoon. The bad guys doesn't try to be anything other than a funny cartoon. And it works. I mean, it's entertaining. It is what it is. And you know, they didn't aim very high. And they met their goal.
You know what I just realized watching Bad Guys? There are no fart jokes in Zootopia. And the fart jokes?
Oh, yeah.
Of Bad Guys. It's just nice to get away from that.
Not only are there no fart jokes in Zootopia, but there's not even a crotch shot joke in Zootopia, which I'm very glad about. Anyway. Again,
I don't know if anything's coming in here, but it's the panel ended. I don't see anything for 1 o'clock in Fayette, but I don't know. Well, all right, that was good.
I have to go down and see how my bids held up.